This is an Audio Wool original.
This episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Springheel Jack Coffee. You need great coffee. Jack delivers. Visit springheeljack.coffee.
I bet Byron didn't know that either.
I bet he didn't.
What did I know?
That Peele's dressing as Jack Nicholson from The Shining on the press tour.
I saw it, yeah.
Oh, Byron did know. These two didn't know.
You sound like Lindsay Lohan.
Don't fucking say that to me.
That's something Lindsay would say.
No, I will get up and do the Lindsay, like, it's Greek Lilo. Island dance, though. You know that?
Nope.
That dance?
It's pretty good.
You're definitely going to spill something.
Fright Day. I mean, are you all ready?
Absolutely.
That was the incorrect order.
I apologize. It is Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron. And a lake house vacation turns terrifying when a family of red-clad creeps home invade the home of a family that looks like them, but not exactly. And we're going to try to talk about it, reviewing Jordan Peele's Us. And looking like someone else isn't an uncommon experience, but certain cases of closer resemblance can cause quite the ruckus. It's doppelgangers in this week's edition of Byron's Serial Corner.
Bam!
I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hello.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
And Jamie's right here.
Oh, hey, guys.
Hi, Jamie.
Lindsay Lohan? Is that you?
No. Stop it. I do not sound like Lindsay Lohan.
You truly do sound like a Lohan who smoked a bunch of cigarettes this
I've
week.
I've actually never smoked a cigarette in my entire life. True story.
Yeah, you do sound like Lindsay.
I mean, if I could do the dance, I'm going to start watching videos of the dance.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, I've been sick. More sick than Sam. Sam was sick, too. But
you also celebrated a birthday. I'm kind of prodding at how awful your life has been.
Oh, no, my life hasn't been
that
bad.
And why I have to talk most of this episode.
Well, you have to talk most of this episode because though I love reports, the humans who listen to us also love serial killer reports, and they just don't get enough of it, Byron.
Well, they're not getting it tonight.
Well, I mean, they are. It's just special.
It's not serial killers.
Well,
at
I
all.
Mean, but it kind of is.
No, it's not.
Like killers.
Kind of.
That could be serial.
Setting you up for success.
Yep. So we had a really long spell of sickness in our house. Pakwaji fell ill, passed it to Sam, and then Sam passed it to me.
Kelly ate peanuts, which she's deathly allergic to, so that was...
accidentally on my birthday.
It that was funny.
Comedy of errors a bit.
Pretty great birthday. What did you have?
So I was like already on all this cold medicine because I, you know, had this bad cold.
Bronchitis.
Somebody as a birthday gift, which was like the kindest, sweetest thing, gave me this big giant cupcake, and the girls put candles in it and saying happy birthday, and I take a big lick of the frosting as the person's telling me that it's an Elvis cupcake, and in the back of my head I'm like, shit, Elvis loved peanut butter, oh no. Then I'm trying not to make a big deal of it because I don't want to feel bad.
You're having an allergic reaction.
Right, but...
so she just opens up the medicine cabinet and starts drinking cold medicine.
Okay, like no, that's not true. That is medicines. Not true. I know that I'm supposed to drink children's allergy medicine. The problem is I drank half a bottle of children's Claritin, and then I was like, Sam, this is the stuff I'm supposed to drink, right? He's like, no, that's not going to do anything. It's supposed to be Benadryl.
Oh.
So then I had to drink half a bottle of Benadryl on top of the half a bottle of Claritin that I had just drank, and they are children's ones, so it's not as bad.
On top of all the cold medicine that was already in her system, of which there were three varieties.
I was so out of it that then I also took cough syrup before I passed out.
Why?
I didn't want to cough all night.
This isn't a Panos Cosmos and Sam, film. What are you doing?
Sam, he says he told me not to take it. I don't remember anything, but basically the next day and a half is just like a real freaking blur. My voice didn't come back until yesterday, and this is what I sound like. So Byron's Serial Corner, yay.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, in your downtime, did you watch anything?
Hold on, I did.
We'll wait.
What did I watch that was scary? There was some series.
Okay.
I watched a couple episodes, and I believe this is a couple years old, but TV show Damien. Supposed to be based on The Omen.
Is it like he's all grown up? Is he a sexy college student
or something? Post-archaeologist, reporter dude, something.
Okay.
It's bad. I don't recommend it. I really tried to make it through a couple episodes, but it was solidly bad.
Why did you watch this and where was it?
It's on Hulu. I was just trying to see if there were any spooky series that I haven't heard a bunch of people talk about that I could maybe like be on the front end of discussing.
You want to be on the front end of a show that started out on Lifetime, got moved to A&E, and then got canceled after one season?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, have you heard anybody else talk about it? No, I don't think so.
You're on the balls.
There we go. It was bad. The acting was bad. The story was bad.
Damien deserves better.
He does deserve better. So I gave up on that one.
Well, Damien's actually had better in two sequels.
And a reboot. The reboot wasn't bad. Had that Schreiber live in it. He's pretty good. I don't know. I feel like there's something else spooky that I watched too. If you guys talk, by the time you're done with it, I'll remember what it was.
Okay, just interrupt like I imagine you would.
Okay, I will.
I didn't really watch a horror film in the accepted sense, but it scared me quite a bit.
What?
It's a film called Relaxer.
Oh, that one looked like
I don't know
feelings
about
going
it.
Yeah.
Joel Patrakis, he put out a movie 2 years ago called The Alchemist Cookbook I really enjoyed. Mm. A lot of people love his second film, Buzzard. But this film... gross.
Oh.
A pushover man-child who, in an attempt to impress his bully of an older brother, accepts the impossible challenge of beating the 256th level of Pac-Man.
Interesting.
He can't leave the couch until he does.
Where does he go potty?
That's honestly one of the least gross parts of this film.
Oh, no.
Really?
So
why?
Much.
Oh, no.
It's the stickiest feeling film. Ooh. I've seen in a long time. And if it had smell-o-vision, I would have vomited in my lap.
Oh.
It's really cool, though. Did you guys watch Mother?
No.
I watched parts of it. I really couldn't finish it, to be honest.
You know how the house in Mother kind of evolves throughout the movie?
Yeah, it's like a human.
This apartment kind of does the same thing. It just gets grosser and grosser.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a single set. Very strange. I think this is one of the most unnecessary descents into madness, but I really, really enjoyed it. It's an oscilloscope.
Yeah, they're not afraid of weird.
It's out this week, so I recommend you check it out.
I remembered what I watched.
Perfect timing.
I watched the preview for The Order and felt like I should probably watch it at some point.
Okay.
But then I decided that it did look a little bit too teeny. So I was like, you know,
like
I'm going to skip this. No, like TWEN. Werewolves and vampires and maybe sparkly. I'm not really sure.
It seems a little sparkly.
They're pushing it on Netflix. It's new on Netflix. It's a series. There's one season out now.
I don't want to be mean, but I think Netflix is getting dumber.
Well, I mean, they really put out at a lot of different levels,
it's
right?
It's so funny that you mentioned that because I just saw a report today. In 2018, they actually added 51% Netflix original content to the service, compared to just 49% third-party stuff that they had bought.
Wow. So yeah, they've crossed the line.
There are a bunch of like third and fourth and ninth tier shit that makes its way on there because they didn't have to license it. They paid someone $12 to make it.
But the other thing that I watched, which I just started, and to be honest, have not even watched a ton of the first episode, but I'm excited because I've never heard Byron talk about this story.
Excuse me?
And I have listened to a couple podcasts about it, and I find the story very interesting, but it's a true crime thing that I've never heard B get into. Disappearance of Madeleine McCann.
The entire McCann case has become a phenomenon.
If you made a dozen movies out of this, nobody would believe them.
I've done thousands of cases. With the Madeleine case, I've seen the worst things a human being can see. The worst.
I did see this pop up on Netflix as well.
Obviously, I'm going to have to tread very lightly and slowly because it is a true story and it is a child. Those conspiracy guys, which I know I'm not supposed to talk about other podcasts, but those conspiracy
it's good
guys,
when you point it out,
I'm just saying that they have Irish accents. We can never compete with them. So that's just the way it goes.
Are you serious? This is my Irish accent. I can.
Oi, Toy, you could listen to me for the next 8 hours. 8 hours of not that funniness.
That you just turned into an East Indian accent in the middle of your Irish accent.
Yeah, but in my defense, it was still easier to listen to than those two for 6 hours.
Well, there are three of them. They're wonderful, and they did a story on it because the disappearance happened overseas, Portugal or Spain, one of those.
I know this case.
It's talked about, I think, more in England than it is
in
the States.
She got left in a hotel room by herself?
Well,
if your child isn't safe at a resort, where is she safe?
The media made their daughter the most high-profile missing child in the world.
It was like a couple families on vacation, and they were kind of at like this vacation property, and they left the kids alone.
The adults went out to get drinks.
Around the corner, but Yeah, I probably will watch this.
I mean, yeah, I saw that pop up as well. I caught my eye. I just haven't had quite the time to...
I'm not going to lie. It looks pretty good. I don't think I'm going to be able to watch the rest of it.
I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
We've been too busy getting these Brew Originals out.
Brew dog skis.
So a lot of you guys have been downloading the Brew app, taking advantage of that 30-day free trial, and you get to listen to two new shows of ours.
You can.
You really should do that, please.
Yes.
This is the first time I've had a boss in a very long time, and I would really like to make them happy.
Yes, please. We really like to be liked.
There'll be a link in the description of this episode that'll take you right there to the App Store.
Yep.
It's been a weird week, and a conversation with the Seth Breedlove interview will be out, and you guys really got into it this time.
We did. Oh, we did.
And Brew will be available on Android here in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Yep.
So check it out. Sam, what have you been up to?
I feel like Mother Teresa, kind of a little bit.
Okay, how?
Caring for the sick, selflessly plugging gaps with myself. She's better dressed than I am.
Sounds like you had quite the week, Sam.
Yeah, I don't know if this happens to anybody else, but like when I get sick and have a fever, sometimes things just blur together and I might be crossing over into different space-time continuums at different points.
Or maybe you're seeing through the eyes of your lookalike.
I'm a doppel G?
Quite possibly.
In this week's edition of Byron's Serial Corner?
Fire emergency.
Please don't talk to listen. I'm sorry, I can't.
Hey, they found the bodies of at least 3 young boys, 6 more bodies under the John Gacy house. And
one longtime acquaintance describes Dahmer as one weird dude.
Stay tuned for Byron's Serial Corner.
A couple weeks ago, to celebrate Jamie's birthday, we called up some friends and went bowling. It was a Friday night. It was neon night. Rednecks to the left of us, rednecks to the right. There we
stuck
were.
Stuck in the middle?
With them.
I love that song. That dance from the movie
makes
me happy every time.
I even remember hearing one of them use the F word and not the one you're thinking.
Oh, God. The only one that actually bothers me, you mean? Oh.
Anyway, a couple frames in, my friend Luke, he's a friend of the show. Hi, Luke. Walked up to the line and is interrupted by a man holding something in his hand. It's loud, and I'm sitting a few feet back, so I can't quite tell what's going on. I nervously scoot closer because I'm very brave and strong. Turns out, this obvious truck lover didn't want trouble. He wanted a picture.
Really?
He said that Luke looked exactly like a buddy of his.
Okay.
Whether or not the resemblance was assisted by 2 to 3 pitchers of Bud Light, this isn't uncommon. It is, however, always uncomfortable and much more interesting to the person who is having that experience. Has this ever happened to you? Has anyone ever came up to you and said you look exactly like?
Well, funny you should mention that. Once I was traveling, it was the first time I'd flown overseas, and I was traveling by myself. I was like 17, flying to Spain.
Ooh.
Did
you take Madeline?
No, it was a different year.
Oh, God.
And she was in Portugal anyway. I had sunglasses on, sitting in a corner of the airport by myself, kind of terrified because I was pretty convinced I was going to be killed. Some little girl came up to me like super shy and asked for my autograph. And to this day, I have no idea who she thought I was. I just signed my name, piece of paper, and gave it back to her.
That is such a Kelly thing to do.
What it a is. Disappointment.
So apparently I look like somebody, but I will never know who.
On more than one occasion, people stop me when I'm in like a line at a grocery store and say that I look like Seth Rogen.
Okay, I definitely don't see that.
I know, right? And I'm never surprised because they look like the kind of people who would like Seth Rogen.
I mean, I like Seth Rogen.
I do too, but they're usually a bit blizzed.
Oh, right. So things are, I getcha. Okay.
And one time there was a music festival in town and the electronic artist Dan Deacon was playing.
You don't know him.
A lot of people thought I looked like Dan Deacon and said, hey, good set last night. And I just
and said nice.
I said, thanks. Thanks, guys.
You too, buddy.
How about you, Sam?
Yeah, I've been brought in a few times because I look like like people.
I'll get to something similar to that in a bit. So while I was driving up here, I realized that I could have done a full report on serial killer selections, how some have specific types with similar looking victims, but I didn't do that. And this may be encroaching a bit on your territory, Kelly. But I think for maximum enjoyability, I should get into the history of this phenomena a bit.
Let's hear it.
Before the instinct was to snap a quick pic with someone who looks like you, or a friend in the case of Luke, it was actually considered bad luck to bump into a lookalike.
Well, yeah. Have you seen Back to the Future?
Well, okay. Calvin.
Right, Scott.
Calvin Klein, remember?
Obvi.
The history of these experiences can be traced back thousands of years and was present in the legend, stories, writings, and art of many cultures of the past. According to age-old German folklore, all living creatures have a, quote, spirit double, who is invisible but identical to the living individual. In 1796, German writer Johann Paul Richter, who wrote under the pseudonym Jean-Paul, coined the word doppelganger from doppel meaning double and ganger meaning goer.
Double goer.
Double goer.
Double goer.
Yeah.
I mean, Maybe we should switch to that permanently.
I kind of like it. These second selves are different than ghosts or spirits, which of course only appear after death and if you believe in them, and sometimes are described as spiritual opposites or negative of their human counterparts. Yes, Sam, this is the origin of the evil twin concept you've seen in so many TV programs whose writers have ran out of ideas. You know, Star Trek's Mirror Mirror episode where Spock has that goatee. And I think the captain has no sleeves. Is that right?
Oh my God.
I have no idea.
Superman apparently had a nemesis named Ultraman. Batman had Owlman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But that's
all
Sam Dork stuff. And I'm going to...
None of that means anything to me.
Sanctuary Moon. Coming soon?
I don't know.
Long before Jean-Paul, in ancient Egypt, the Ka was one aspect of the soul, depicted as a spirit identical to the body. Have you ever heard of a Ka?
No.
The Ka lives within the body of the individual and therefore needed the body after death. And this is why Egyptians mummify their dead. If the body broke down, their spirit double would die and the deceased would lose their chance for eternal life.
Huh.
In one Egyptian myth entitled The Greek Princess, an Egyptian perspective of the Trojan War, the Ka of Helen was used to mislead Paris of Troy, helping to stop the war.
Wow.
Extra spirits can sometimes be helpful.
But not always.
Not always. Throughout Europe and parts of Africa, changelings, not to be confused with the smash hit Angelina Jolie vehicle, were thought to be supernatural children left in the place of human infants. People from the Orkney Island of Scotland feared small fairy-like creatures called trows, not crows. According to legend, trows would give birth to sickly children. Pregnant women were carefully guarded from the trows, who would often steal their healthy little babies and replace them with their own children. These were also known as changelings.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you remember The Hollow?
Corin Hardy's first film, much better than The Nun, exactly
right,
that.
And there was a heavy changeling theme throughout.
A less spooky, possibly more convenient example was the Norse Vardogr. That can't be right. They would appear in the place of a person they resembled before the person would arrive.
Okay.
It's like reverse deja vu.
Yeah.
So he's going to show up, use up all your drink tickets, and then leave before you even get there.
Maybe you just drank him and forgot. They could hold a spot in line for you, maybe?
I mean, I can think of a lot of things. Check my car for car bombs.
Okay, that's a good point.
Just for when I make the rival families angry, I guess.
And in English and Irish literature of the 18th and 19th centuries, they speak of something called a fetch. It's an ethereal double whose appearance, like a doppelganger, signaled death.
Oh yeah, it's always bad.
If you see this doppel-G, you might not be living much longer.
I didn't realize that's what a fetch was. I always thought it was just a ghost.
Well, wait, is that what they mean when they say you're fetching?
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was like good-looking.
I think they're homonyms.
Other kind of stray signs of a doppelganger that I found in my research, no shadow and no reflection, which I always thought was vampires, so I would be more concerned about staking
that. Vampires are doppelgangers.
You know, Byron, just tell me how I kill it.
In 1821, a Persian writer named E.T.A. Hoffman, which people must love asking if he's running late.
Interesting.
What's the E.T.A. on E.T.A., you know?
Oh my God.
It's kind of funny.
Wait, he's already here.
Ooh, a bit of a Vardgover situation. He titled a story Die Doppelganger, and another one of his stories depicts a monk haunted by a chaotic double that acts as both a scapegoat and an antagonist. Hans Christian Andersen. This is a name I know without knowing any of his work.
Oh, you do too.
What does that mean, do I? Was he Swiss Family Robinson?
Hansel and Gretel?
Okay, sure.
I thought the Brothers Grimm wrote.
Oh, maybe. What about Sleeping Beauty?
He wrote dumb ones like The Silver Skate, and there's the one about the boy who put his finger in the... I don't know.
Okay. Well, he also released a fairy tale called Skygigan,
which means the shadow, in 1847.
Ooh.
In this fairy tale, a man's shadow separates from his body and gradually becomes his walking double, demonstrating the exact opposite physical and moral traits and eventually replacing him entirely. And we may talk a little bit about this kind of thing later. One of the most famous depictions of doppelgangers comes from 1851. It's a sketch and a watercolor that I guess it was filled in 1864. Didn't know that's how they did art. It's called How They Met Themselves by Dante Gabriel Rossetti. It is fun to do Italian accents, Kevin.
Isn't it? I mean, it's almost impossible to read something.
My girlfriend's Italian. I can do it, right?
Why? I have an Italian friend.
According to interpretation, two medieval lovers are walking through the woods at twilight when they encounter their doubles who glow supernaturally. The man draws his sword in surprise while his lover appears to collapse in a deathly swoon. In this image, I'll have it in the show notes, this episode of FrightDay.com. They are glowing, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Bottom line, the concept of the doppelganger is a great literary device to display the duality of man. But what happens when it steps outside the written page?
Oh, not good things. I'm betting you're going to tell us.
Catherine the Great, the 18th century empress of Russia. Sam, do you know anything about this person?
Yeah, I do. Born in the early 1700s, and she became Peter the Great's wife, who was the Tsar of Russia. Or emperor of Russia, I guess. He was not very well liked. He went on vacation and she realized that she would be a much better ruler than he was. Mm-hmm. So she gave some speeches to the military and they thought that she probably, yeah, would be a better empress. So they protected her while a priest performed the coronation ceremony at a church. And by the time Peter got back, Catherine was in charge of Russia and she had him arrested and jailed. She had an insane crown, almost 5,000 diamonds in it, 76
we didn't prepare
huge
this.
Pearls.
Oh, I know you didn't.
And a gigantic ruby, which is kind of funny because the people liked her a lot better than they liked Peter. But also, I mean, you think no good person does that as their first act, have that crown made.
Oh, she's pretty vain. Yeah,
but she put down a lot of rebellions during her reign, uprisings and resistance movements. She ruled with an iron
fist.
Resistai. E-A-U-X.
Probably was right. I don't even know. I was just making it up.
Well, one night later in her life, she was lying in her bed and she was awoken by concerned servants with fear on their faces. There was a problem in the throne room. She was there. Catherine rushed to her throne, finding her doppelganger sitting calmly. She immediately ordered her guards to shoot at this imposter. And the tale actually doesn't go into detail about what the resolution of this situation was, but she did die of a stroke just a few weeks later, which could very well be a little bit of fetch action in play.
Mm-hmm.
Or she was crazy.
Or that crown was just really heavy.
Yeah, I just, I like her style, though.
And you know Frankenstein, the big guy made of dead parts?
It's Frankenstein.
Okay. And that's actually his
and
monster.
And a monster built him.
Written by Mary Shelley.
Yes.
She is quite the talented author. But her husband, Percy, was a pretty good poet himself.
Yeah, at the time, he was kind of a national hero.
Saving my butt over here. Yep.
Like, we don't know who he is now, especially like horror nerds. We all know who Mary Shelley is, but Percy Bysshe Shelley was pretty gigantic superstar deal at the time.
And unfortunately, in 1892, he drowned in a sailing accident. But before he died, he confessed to his wife, Mary, that he had met his doppelganger many times.
Ooh.
These rendezvous include one partially haunting experience where he walked onto a terrace only to be greeted by his doppelganger who asked him, quote, "How long do you mean to be content?"
Whoa, that's an unsettling question.
Even stranger, Percy's doppelganger was also witnessed by his close friend Jane Williams, who saw it passing her window on a route frequently walked by the real Percy to a dead end, but never returning. The real Percy was nowhere near.
Mm, whoa.
I actually wrote my script. Kelly Ghost Noise? Can you give it a...
That's...
All right. It's as good as it's going to
be. And he was never quite sure if it looked exactly like him because he was looking through clouds of opium smoke and details were a little obscure.
Right. Yeah. It was an epidemic then, I suppose.
It was all the rage.
Honest Abe could not tell a lie.
Mm.
Let's see about that. 1895, Noah Brooks released a book called Washington in Lincoln's Time, and according to his account, soon after Lincoln was elected in 1860, he arrived home one day and looked into his bureau.
looked into his mirror, where he saw himself reflected in double. Lincoln said, quote, "My face, I noticed, had two separate and distinct images, the tip of the nose of one being about 3 inches from the tip of the other. I was a little bothered, perhaps startled, and got up and looked at the glass, but the illusion vanished. On lying down again, I saw it a second time, plainer if possible than before, and then I noticed that one of the faces was a little paler, say 5 shades than the other. I got up."
What Pantone are we talking here?
I know, he's very specific. "I got up and the thing melted away and I went off, and in the excitement of the hour forgot all about it. Nearly, but not quite, for the thing would once in a while come up and give me a little pang as if something uncomfortable had happened. When I went home again that night, I told my wife about it, and a few days afterward, I made the experiment again, when, sure enough, the thing came back again. But I never succeeded in bringing the ghost back after that, though I once tried very industriously to show it to my wife, who was somewhat worried about it. Mary Todd Lincoln believed that the paleness was a bad omen, which meant that Lincoln would serve his first term, but not live to finish his second."
And she was well known for her stability and
okay, don't be an asshole.
Rigid political acumen.
She actually was very, very bright.
She was very bright, but let's leave the premonitions to the professionals, Mary Todd.
Who says she wasn't?
That's actually very possible, yeah. But wasn't she schizophrenic?
No, she had really, really bad depression because at least one of her kids died.
Mm, that's right.
It was a lot of them, if I remember anything from Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Okay.
"Do you feel it? That chill? The cold that seeps into your marrow and leaves a trail of invisible frost along your spine? You left that door open, didn't you? Did you? The daylight hours are short now, and the night endless and hungry. The solstice has yet to come. Or has it passed? Wasn't there a porch light on at the house across the street? A warm, sepia spot of hope in the emptiness? Wasn't there a house across the street? Is this how it all ends? In mindless, black cold? Now there is only ice, void, and piping hot Spring-Heeled Jack coffee. As you sip from your mug, there is warmth. Maybe Spring-Heeled Jack can turn this around, this infernal cold. Then again, it's only sustainably sourced artisanal coffee from a passionate family-crafted roaster. It's only coffee. Is it only coffee? It's warm and delicious, and for a moment you thaw as well. You watch out your window through the frosted pane, where now there is nothing. Nothing but you and Spring-Heeled Jack. Now available on Amazon Prime and at Spring-Heeled, that's Spring-Heeled, Jack.coffee.
But as we move into modern times, cases of doppelgangers become less paranormal, and in this case, more convenient and brutal. Between April 5th and April 9th, 2018, a woman named Lois Reese murdered Pamela Hutchinson in a Fort Myers Beach condo, shooting her twice through a pillow. She then robbed her of her cash and jewelry, took her car, and most importantly, her ID. You see, Lois and Pamela looked quite a bit alike, and this was important to Lois because she wasn't new to this murder thing.
All right, our top story here at 5:30. We have a Minnesota woman who's now wanted in connection with her husband's death.
Sounds like this is now a nationwide manhunt.
On March 21st of the same year, in a small town of Blooming Prairie, Minnesota, a community of somewhere around 2,000, a husky 54-year-old man with a straight blonde mustache named David Reese was murdered at his home. He was shot multiple times. Lois, his wife, was nowhere to be seen, and neither was her white Cadillac SUV. Look at what all this Law and Order's done to me.
Look at the shirt.
Sorry. Okay, you're wearing a special victims unit sweater.
Oh, wow.
Portrait sweatshirt.
On the run, considered armed and potentially dangerous, the manhunt begins. March 28th, she withdraws $11,000 from her husband's bank account, spending most of the day gambling at a place called Diamond Joe Casino in Northwood, Iowa.
There's more ways to play at Diamond Joe Casino.
Eventually, she headed towards Fort Myers Beach in Florida, arriving on April 4th. A day later, Lois met a former car salesman named Pamela. She'd struck up a conversation at an eatery, and the two hit it off. They were seen walking into Pam's room on April 4th for about a half an hour before they emerged again, returning to the room just before 1 a.m. on April 5th. The next day, they were seen again eating and drinking at a place called Smokin' Oysters Brewery. I feel like I'm giving plugs, but
we actually got a lot of sponsors for this episode.
It's true. Smokin' Oysters Brewery, a place to bring a person before you kill him.
Yep.
It was just a short walk away from the condo, and it was after this dinner at the bar that the killing likely happened. An employee at the hotel found Pamela after checking the room because the water wasn't working properly. They would have found her sooner, but an employee told detectives that someone who claimed to be Pamela called the front desk on April 6th to extend her stay 3 days. By the time they found her on the bathroom floor, decomposition had already begun.
Ugh.
We're in Florida.
Hot, humid.
One of the bullets entered her torso, hitting her heart and aorta. A towel was shoved outside the bathroom door to create a seal. The guest bed had been slept in.
Yeah.
On the nightstand, Pamela's purse had been turned inside out.
Lake County Sheriff's Office, this is Penny speaking. How can I help you?
Hi, there's an ATV out for a Lois Reese from Blooming Prairie, Minnesota in Steele County. She just got out of her car at my Florida house. I also live in Blooming Prairie, so I know about the whole thing. But she just got out of her 05 white Escalade in front of my house. And I think wanted to inquire, are you still there?
Yes, this is Lake County, Florida, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay.
She got, so I am at Fort Myers Beach. She was just here.
Okay.
So if she's still on the beach, if she didn't quick get in her car and go over the bridge, she's in a white 05 Escalade.
Okay. And
if you do some research, it's Steele County, Minnesota, that's trying to find her.
Okay, so she has a warrant, is that what you're saying?
Yes, for the possible murder of her husband and for sure for embezzling charges.
Okay.
A woman accused of killing her husband in Minnesota could be in Fort Myers right now. Investigators believe Lois Rice is armed and dangerous.
Four in Your Corner's Jillian Hartman has been digging into this. She's live from the U.S. Marshal's office, who is helping in this case. Jillian?
Well, Chris and Lisa, right now the U.S. Marshal's office here in Fort Myers is working closely with their office in Minnesota to try and locate Lois Reese. That's according to our Fox affiliate in Rochester, Minnesota. This is the 56-year-old woman authorities are searching for right now. Reese is facing second-degree murder charges for the shooting death of her husband back in March. According to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, her car was found abandoned here in Florida. She remains at large.
On April 6th, the Lee County Sheriff's Office found Lois's Cadillac abandoned on Bowditch Point, where you ditch cars. She then stopped at a Wells Fargo on her way out of town and withdrew $5,000 for her road trip. Where was she headed, you think?
Las Vegas.
Disney World.
The great state of Texas.
Okay.
Sam's favorite place.
Well, he likes it better than California.
I guess, like, you have a pretty good chance in whatever direction you point in America of ending up in Texas just by geography.
That's not true. That's bad geography.
It's very big.
Lois was named the suspect in Pamela's murder after the two were seen together in hotel and bar video footage. She's also seen in Louisiana casinos in near Corpus Christi, Texas. April 17th, U.S. Marshal's office put up billboards in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. Rewards totaling $6,000 were offered. This was one of the biggest manhunts involving someone from Minnesota since the Andrew Kananen incident. Mm. Remember that?
No.
It's the subject of American Crime Story Season 2, Assassination of Gianni Versace.
Oh, yes.
Now,
Gianni Versace.
Now on Netflix. I highly recommend you check it out. She had quite a head start on the authorities. Now in Pam's 2005 white Acura TL, police did track her twice on her trip down to Texas. Once by license plate reader while traveling west on
I-10 around Lafayette, Louisiana, and another time in Texas where she was ultimately apprehended in South Padre Islands after a manager of a restaurant recognized her from a video.
Her grandma, accused of killing her lookalike, captured. She was recognized by the manager, George Hickenbotham, who called authorities.
The lady walked right in, come right up to her podium. One of my servers, Carlos, gave her a menu to check it out. She was checking it out. When she finished, she turned and facing the signs right here. She was reading the signs. That's when I asked, is there anything we could do for her? She flicked it on like this, and that's what it picked me up was the color of her hair.
They had just missed her by a few minutes, but they looked around the area and found her at another local restaurant.
Two undercover officers approached Lois, who was chatting it up at the bar, and asked her to confirm her identity. She was then arrested without incident by federal deputies waiting outside.
Any reaction from the officers, you know, fear that she might have done these killings maybe locally and try to get the identity of maybe one of your own residents?
You know, it's hard for us to speculate anything. At this time and point, all we know is she was here and we got the tip, and fortunately there was no further incident when we conducted the arrest, and we're fortunate for that, and we're just happy that we're able to put an end to the spree that was occurring.
Your officers approached her. I mean, what did she do? Did she resist, or what did she actually do?
No, in my brief conversation with the officers, she didn't resist. I think she's kind of built up a resilience, maybe where she thought herself that she may not get caught or whatever. So she seemed to have let her guard down a little bit, which the officers were able to take advantage of that. The two initial officers, one being a deputy U.S. Marshal and one on the task force, they were in plain clothes while the uniform officers were outside. So she wasn't overly alerted to the whole situation. I think by the time she realized what was going on, I believe, it was out of her control even at that point.
Did she have any weapons on her?
She did not have any weapons on her. We do have a car to process yet. It's been secured and waiting for a forensic process, and that's a lot of steps to that, so we're not sure what all we'll find.
On Lois, they found IDs, credit cards, and in her possessions, two pistols, both matching the weapons used in the murders. After being on the run for 4 weeks, she was only 27 miles from the border, and it's believed that she was heading towards Mexico. Although the media called these two doppelgangers, in truth...
Is that a bit liberal?
Kind of.
Application,
Pamela,
of the word?
She was a few years older and a few pounds lighter, with more of a square jaw and cropped blonde bangs that Lois didn't have. But both the women shared light eyes, skin, and hair coloring.
Facial spiderweb tattoos.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that's not,
no.
It's not my notes, but a vague plumpness is in my notes.
A vague plumpness.
That counts for being a doppelganger?
I guess, and they have sort of similar features that if pressed, a comparison would probably go unchallenged.
Interesting.
I will have side-by-side images of both of them in the show notes of this episode.
I'd like to analyze those, yeah.
It's very interesting. The authorities dubbed her Losing Streak Lois because of her gambling addiction and
poor Lois.
How bad she was at it.
Oh, and you gotta hope for a better law enforcement nickname than that.
That's not great. Her streak continues as she is currently rotting in jail, awaiting sentencing. Actually, like a month ago, she just entirely missed her, I guess, day in court, one of them.
Really?
The woman accused of killing a tourist on Fort Myers Beach did not show up in court for a hearing this morning. Lois Reese stayed in her jail cell. Her attorney was in the courtroom, and the judge telling the attorney Reese has to be at her next court appearance.
We are waiving her appearance.
Well, I think she needs to be here at some point.
Yes, right? Sir.
We've waived it ever since.
She was just busy.
I guess.
She's like, yeah, you know, it's not a good day for me.
I think I'm going to stay in today.
Like, it's weird that they can let them do, or that they let you do that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's my turn to wash the toilet.
Gross. But sometimes a doppelganger can end up on the wrong side of jail bars.
Ooh.
Kansas City, Kansas, 1999. A trio of crackheads attempt to steal a purse from a woman.
That's too bad.
She was leaving a Walmart store. She managed to hang on to it, but her phone was unfortunately snatched. And because she fell to the ground and scraped her knees, this incident was classified as an aggravated robbery. A witness at the scene wrote down a license plate number. Investigators pulled up the name attached to the registration.
A gentleman named Robert Jones was called into the precinct and forced into a lineup where he was pointed at, identified as the perp. However, he wasn't.
No?
There was no physical evidence, DNA, or fingerprints that linked him to the crime, and despite the solid alibi of being at a girlfriend's birthday party, with several guests testifying that they saw him and confirming that he spent the next day watching flicks with his girlfriend cleaning up, he was sentenced to 19 years in prison.
Really?
He had prior convictions as well.
Ruh-roh.
He appealed his case and lost. But Richard always maintained his innocence, and his innocence persistence paid off after meeting with the Midwest Innocence Project, who launched an investigation.
Do you think you can preliminarily enlist the help of the Innocence Project? Get them on staff now?
Well, because you can't know that you're going to be innocent. So.
Well, no, but I would like to be innocent. Okay. So if they could start working on that now, then we could
skip all this.
Let Byron do his report. It's much better than yours, Sam.
While in jail, Richard started hearing from inmates that there was this guy who looked exactly like him.
His name was George Bulbados.
No, his name was Rick.
Damn it! Thought I finally connected the dots.
This information piqued the interest of a woman named Alice Craig, who is Richard's lead attorney. They looked into it and saw two strikingly similar-looking people's mugshots. And more images in the show notes of episode of Friday.com. They also discovered that Ricky Amos, it's Rick, was also the person associated with the address provided by the witness, not Richard. This was literally a case where the police saw a picture, flipped through other pictures, and saw our names. Bring in this guy and this guy and this guy.
Oh.
They encouraged the witnesses to select Richard as the guilty person.
This happens all the time in Law and Order.
Well, dun dun, it does. Yeah. In light of this new evidence, the judge reversed the jury trial and the state dismissed the case in 2017. After serving 17 of the 19 years in his sentence, Rick and Richard are close in age. They have similar skin tone and the same facial hair and cornrows. These two, I think, look the most similar out of all the doppelganger cases I've talked about tonight. But Rick has denied any involvement in this crime and won't be prosecuted anyway because of the statute of limitations on the crime. In December of last year, Richard was awarded $1.1 million by the state of Kansas for this.
I really need my Doppel G to get me blamed for something just bad enough to get some money, but not bad enough to get thrown in jail.
Not 17 years for a wrong.
I'd rather not.
Boy, $1 million for 17 years hourly?
Cookie Lyons, jeez.
I mean, that's pretty good money. In conclusion, traditional scientists explain this manifestation of double spirits or doppelgangers as nothing but electrical glitches in the brain or mental illness such as schizophrenia, where there's a neurological condition that's a symptom of this called hiatoscopy.
Nope, got nothing on that one.
Which can cause you to hallucinate your own image at a distance.
That seems like a egomaniacal mental illness to have.
Mm-hmm. It's also a symptom of epilepsy. Which is interesting. Ooh. Kind of scary to see yourself at a distance and then have a seizure.
Yeah, especially if you've seen tonight's movie.
Mm-hmm. However, there are still folks who believe in the presence of a W, and I think that's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I mean, they say that there's one of you out there for everyone.
I've heard that. And in fact, if you do want to find your double, maybe check out the Twin Strangers Project.
Really?
Twinstrangers.net. It's kind of like those annoying Facebook, what celebrity do you look like? Things. Basically, you update your photo and they use a face recognition software to compare you against millions of profiles in their database. And I say, don't do that.
No, it's great because then you can find out like where your long lost half siblings are and stuff.
Then you go into databases.
Yeah, strangers are scary. And this is why I don't.
I shouldn't be in databases.
Do a 23andMe. Can't do it.
At some point in the fairly near future, I would like a little bit of credit for never bringing up the T-1000 in this discussion of doppelgangers.
But you just did. So you don't get any credit because you just did it.
No,
literally.
I waited until after.
It's not after yet, baby. Yeah.
Why is that? Because you didn't say.
The fat lady sang.
Thank you for that report.
Oh, thank you so much for that report, Byron.
You're very welcome.
I am terrified of Doppel G's, and between that and our movie tonight, I'm not going to sleep for weeks.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I guess there's no reason to kind of rush out into the review portion if you're not going to sleep, you know.
I could sleep sitting up surrounded by a table of you guys. Seems safer because none of you look that much like me.
Let's review us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Us is a 2019 American psychological horror film written and directed by Jordan Peele. The film stars Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, Elizabeth Moss, and Tim Heidecker. Sam, could you share a little bit about this film?
A family's serenity turns to chaos when a group of doppelgangers begins to terrorize them.
First time in the theater in a while.
It sounds like you guys had a better experience than I did.
I think we may have.
We did.
I mean, quiet, no noises whatsoever. I was concerned that I would have to say something. You know, actually, they did kind of spark up a bit during the appropriate moments. It was like one of those really good...
That is kind of nice.
Yeah. Like there was some laughing, a little bit of gasp.
We went separately because Kelly and I are going through some stuff right now. Oh. So...
That's not true. We just didn't have a babysitter.
All right. If that's what you got to say.
Sure. Yeah. No babysitter.
Oh my God, you're an idiot.
We watched at a dine-in theater.
And we did.
I'm getting used to it. I didn't like the concept initially.
Oh yeah, I had sushi tonight. It was great.
Ridiculous. Those dang pretzel bites, though.
Oh, they are good.
Very good.
They're really good.
Yeah, there are certain things. Agreed. I'm totally with you.
But I mean, I like to take these moments. I mean, talk a little bit about your theatrical experience, but also the trailers that ran.
Pet Sematary looks terrifying, guys.
And I actually heard it's got an R rating, which makes me very happy.
Of course, makes you guys happy.
Dennis Widmeyer and Kevin Cole
from
Starry Guys.
The Starry Guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm looking forward to their kind of big break film here. You know,
Lithgow.
Yeah,
it's got a Lithgow.
Oh, he looks great. Plus, one of the brothers from Lawless. He's going to be great. The dad is, I don't know the actor's name, but it's one of the brothers from Lawless.
And then there's the other two-letter Blumhouse film.
Ma. Duh. That looks awful.
I mean, Ma.
You think Ma looks bad, huh?
It looks awful.
Oh, I thought it looked
and
great.
And I love Octavia Spencer. She's incredible. And it makes me think that there's got to be something to it for her to have taken that part. But I don't know. I feel like maybe she was just doing a favor for somebody because it looks bad.
Her performance in the movie probably cost more than the movie was to shoot.
The movie looks wish upon bad.
You know,
disagree.
I might push to watch this because I actually think it looks like just dumb enough to be fun.
That was what I thought.
La Llorona is another matter entirely.
Yeah, that looks like truck stop toilet.
Love it.
I love Linda Cardellini.
Love her. She's Cardellini great. Cannot do wrong.
Any excuse to talk about the La Llorona legend.
Well, yeah, it's been on my list. Did you see?
I put it on the list. I'm just saying
just
we should.
To make sure you
I was like, this movie looks like garbage. But then I found out that it does tie into the Conjuring verse, and I was like, all right, this movie's fucking garbage.
We call it the Wanra here.
I love the Conjuring verse Wanra. Those things scare me. The Conjuring scares me.
So backing up a little bit, I got to defend Ma.
Legit, for sure. It actually does.
Okay, very scary. The double clap gets you.
Very scary.
The Help.
Amazing movie.
Yeah, and The Girl on the Train. It was kind of fun.
Never saw that one.
You didn't watch that one? Pretty tense. Emily Blunt was in it.
I don't know. Octavia Spencer is one of the best actresses of our time.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Tate Taylor is the director of both of those films, and he is also the director of Ma.
I mean...
So, Kelly, shut up.
Shut up, Kelly.
It looks bad.
We'll see. Did we miss any other trailers?
I don't know that the other ones are
nothing stood out
about.
Kelly
Oh yeah. Wick 3.
Yeah, I mean that
we don't need to say anything about that. Looks amazing.
It's great.
I know, I imagine it is.
All right. It's supposed to be good. Kelly, what was so wrong with your theatrical experience?
Well, I mean, let's talk about the good parts first. I got to go with my best friend. She is now like a full-blown horror convert, so it's great, and we were really excited for it. Sam never gets that enthusiastic about movies, and he came home after you guys saw it and was real jazzed about this one, so I was very excited to see it.
He
had his jazz hands in the air,
like,
even.
You guys can't see, but yeah. Jazz hands.
Put them down.
But we walked into the theater, and it was completely full.
Oh, it is Friday night. We went on a Thursday at 7.
Yeah, we went on a Friday at 7.
Oh, sorry, chum.
And you went at 8:30.
Sure.
An 8:30 show is not nearly as full as a 7 show. The distinction is important.
Is it really?
Very much so.
I would figure
7 is a normie time because you can still get home in time to get up for your 8 to 5 job.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
In the mall. No offense to mall people.
Oh God, I'm glad I don't work in the mall anymore. I did not like that.
Full house.
It was a totally full house, and we had an interesting genre of moviegoers sitting next to us. Well, actually, on one side we had this couple that was perfectly respectable, and then on the other side we had like either 40 or 50 something rather white trashy women.
Oh.
Who had, you know, like the jeans that look like they've been bedazzled.
Yeah.
Like some of those.
Flat pockets.
Yeah. Big flat pockets that get caught on lots of things. Purses that somebody somewhere thinks look like leather, but they just look like shiny plastic.
Okay.
Lots of very thick, can't see through the air perfume. And these women talked through the whole thing. Couple of them had their cell phones on, using their cell phones as a light, like for multiple minutes at a time.
Light to find their vape pens.
Could be, very well could be.
Those light up, they have the, I mean, you can customize them, so they have their own light up thing.
I'm also kidding. Pulled my least favorite move, laughing during super scary parts.
Oh, I hate it.
I hate it.
I hate it.
It kind of got worse as the movie went on. I've certainly been with way worse crowds than this. It was just kind of annoying. And then I think the icing on the cake for me was at the end, as the credits barely started to creep up the bottom of the screen, when I'm just, oh my God, that was so stupid.
Nothing makes me more angry than someone poo-poo's something I enjoy.
You're so f***ing stupid.
All right, watch the mouth for
Sorry.
Me.
And your bedazzles. Anyhow, so they were very annoying. The sushi was good.
And how was the film?
The film was great.
Us had its world premiere at South by Southwest. I was not there. I was moving into my new house. And
I mean, you do have a new house. It's exciting.
Kelly just got back from this movie a little while ago, right before we started recording.
Uh-huh.
And so we shut off all of the lights in the house and the driveway lights and came upstairs.
That was a lot of
fun. And she called me from the driveway screaming at me.
Yeah, I pulled into the driveway. I'm talking to my dad on the phone about the movie on the way home. And I pull in, I'm like, Dad, I'm sorry. I got to go. I'm here to do the podcast. But Sam has turned all the lights in the house off. He's obviously trying to scare me, and I really need to go to the bathroom because I just drank two giant cups of water at the theater. I'm going to wake up our children, and so I need to go and yell at Sam to not scare me.
I know we're trying really hard to not talk about the movie, but we should probably roll into it.
I know. I feel bad because if I were to think about why my movie experience was such a positive one for this, part of it is because I knew so little going in.
Well, let's be vague. I mean, one of my things that I really like about this is the dynamic between the family is really, really cool.
Yes,
it felt very authentic.
Very much so.
Really strong female characters.
I mean, Lupita, what is she in? She's like a relatively new, not extremely talented actress, right?
No, she got some smaller awards the Academy Award, I believe.
Is that what it was?
And then she's been in some indie like things, some off-Broadway presentations of Black Panther.
Okay.
That movie.
Incredibly talented. Lupita.
What are the kids from? Have they been in anything? Because they were pretty damn good too.
You know, not that I can see, but I mean, Winston Duke was also in Black Panther.
Yep.
You should mention that.
Yep.
Don't know about these kids. They seem like relatively new.
Both of them did a very good job. The son in particular, I thought, had some really nuanced.
To me, the family at the beginning, I mean, you know, I don't want to say throughout. I don't want to say anything that gets into anything that happens later in the movie. But you're like, wow, this is a cool family. It seems really natural. Like, Dad is making dad jokes, but he's a pretty cool guy.
Sure.
And, you know, the kids all
I can tell you're a dad that you thought that.
I thought he was pretty freaking
cool. Yeah, he was
fun.
He's just a nice, doofy guy.
His boat, that boat.
Was it Crawdaddy?
Yeah.
I
think it's really hard to capture that family dynamic in a way that feels like, you know, this is something that you could just step right into and you could, you know, as long as you were on your game, you could keep up with these people and you'd want to.
You just brought something. I can't really talk about exactly what I'm talking about right now because it gives something away, but I want to say that the way that they introduce things that come into play later is a lot more effective than stuff you would see in the thing that comes to mind right now is that movie Escape Room. You know, movies that like kind of hover on something that's like, you're going to use the lead pipe for something.
My example for that one is always, what was that terrible movie that was shot in Griffith Park?
BMX Mask Kids.
Yeah, that one. Where there's the beginning and they just like focus on like a rope and things on the floor of the truck while they're driving. It's like, come on, guys.
But in this film, things happen that you are going to remember, but they're not necessarily highlighted. No way.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying, and I totally agree. There are things that they reappear in ways that you could foresee them actually reappearing. Mm-hmm. It's like,
it's
dang it.
God, we're tiptoeing so hard.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but
a bunch of tap dancers.
Yeah,
it's not like this ridiculous MacGuffin that is, like you say, focused on and is in like a glowing light at the beginning. And then you're like, oh my God, they got to move that and put it in that keyhole.
Yeah.
And they're going to open up the entire temple and we can then loot it and retreat successfully.
And it just lends to the kind of the authentic feeling of this film.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what makes it so scary for like literally 30 minutes straight. once this thing kicks into gear, it doesn't let up for a very extended period of time.
And you know, one of the things I felt was interesting, and I hope, I don't think this spoils anything, but
sure,
about 20, maybe 30 minutes into the movie, I remember thinking, like, where the hell is this going to go for the next hour and a half?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the direction, it was really interesting. They kind of expand the world in a way that is...
It's fascinating, the evolution of the story. And mm-hmm. we watch so many horror movies, and it's so hard to find a concept that you really have never seen done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And it's also rare to see a trailer cut in a way that doesn't spoil
doesn't
film.
Ruin everything? Which, yeah.
You see a lot of them now is just going beat by beat by beat and showing all the jumps.
Right.
If you haven't seen this yet, you don't know what you're getting into.
Which is nice, because now that Peele has established that foundation, I think part of the reason he was able to do this without, like, I feel like even the trailer for Get Out showed more about the movie than this trailer
did. Sure.
And I think now he was going on the Get Out reputation that people would go because Get Out had been good. So he didn't need to lure them in with a bunch of random stuff from the trailer, right? And hopefully that will just compound for future movies, because I basically just need him to do a horror movie every year.
Well, it does seem like he's actually got a lot on his plate.
Do we know what the next one's going to be?
Candyman? He's either writing or producing, but maybe directing? I don't know. And I mean, the Twilight Zone, he is narrating, and beyond
when does that premiere?
Pretty soon here.
Very soon.
Isn't it like end of the month?
One of the things that really struck me about this film, it was absolutely terrifying, I thought, throughout, but the mythology, the in-universe mythology Jordan Peele has created here is fascinating, and it's deep, and you're like,
Holy, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Get Out was a pretty overt commentary about what the story was an allegory for.
Mm-hmm.
You could take this in like 100 different directions, and also a lot of different levels as to what this could be getting at, the meaning.
Which we can't talk about at all. We can talk a little bit about the performances, and obviously we talked a lot about doppelgangers. I think that doesn't necessarily... If we talk about the performances of the split characters, I don't think that's really giving anything away.
Okay.
Right? I mean, we all know from the trailer that there are other people who look like them.
But even talking about the performances, I think, I don't know. I can't
leave this episode without talking about Lupita's monologue.
It was terrifying.
I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I think that might be one of the scariest.
Oh God, it was
introductions
terrifying.
To a villain that I have seen.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like I.
And that's the mythology I'm talking about. Like, that feels like something out of some huge epic evil fantasy.
Yeah, that was one of the most horrific moments I've ever seen. Yeah, and I just can't say anything. I can't say anything.
Well,
you have to remember, like, I have ruined movies like Seven for people. I'm so paranoid about saying...
No, just by watching it with them.
I mean, that too, probably.
I mean, I would love to have a conversation about this movie with other people who have seen it. I don't know.
Maybe we do, like, a closed live stream.
That might be a good idea.
Where, like, only come in if you've seen it, because otherwise you're going to have the whole thing ruined for you, and then let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say that, like, Lupita Nyong'o, I don't know. I mean, it's God Oscar.
I was going to say, if Toni Collette got nominated, then
she did not.
She got nominated for a Golden Globe, didn't she?
Maybe. Who cares?
It's the Globes.
I think she did get nominated for a Golden Globe. Maybe she didn't. I don't know. For some reason in my head, she did.
I think she got snubbed.
Okay. Well, yeah, she definitely deserves some insane recognition for this. And, you know, for that matter, it's phenomenal to see the horror genre continuing to draw not only legitimate actors, because sometimes it'll pull in legitimate actors. I don't know, like with Wine Kelly, we talked about Dracula and how it's got...
Reeves, Ryder.
Well...
John Wick.
I was talking a little bit more about Anthony Hopkins,
sure.
But like
Dracula
super
killed his
dog. Amazing actor, but not a great performance in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, just see horror movies not only drawing really phenomenal actors, but also phenomenal performances from phenomenal actors in a way that elevates a movie to not just a good horror movie, but just a really, really good movie.
Horror has always been, just like any other genre, it has its good and it has its bad. I would say that it has more good than bad. I mean, it's not like drama movies where 99.9% of them are runny diarrhea.
I disagree. I think that isn't true, but okay.
There's no way. I mean, Jordan Peele has actually said, which I think is what you have to do. said this is a horror movie, because there are going to be people who still, like with Get Out, say, oh, it's a thriller, it's a suspenseful whodunit, but this is horror. Like, yeah. That doesn't change anything about the quality or the meaningfulness
sure.
of this film.
Just the meaning.
Jordan Peele has given us horror fans like a great gift here, and I hope the normies can get on board, but if not, it doesn't change how good this movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we should probably continue this conversation in another way, because, I mean, Callie, you usually spill at some point that I have to beep out or erase entirely.
Yeah, you just give a play-by-play of the whole movie? You want to do that?
Obviously means a lot to you.
Everybody deserves to have an unspoiled viewing experience of this movie.
What are your final thoughts on this? Sam?
Sorry.
I loved this film. It had feels. It had moments that I think compare very favorably to my favorite bits of different subgenre films. And again, I don't even want to tell you which subgenres those are.
Yeah.
But it pulled from them just effortlessly. This felt so natural. I found myself contrasting it to A Quiet Place, where I was like, wow, this person understands what's scary. He understands what can be done in this genre. And this is an absolutely seminal work that we're experiencing right now. This movie is more or less flawless to me. I'm not even going to title my rating because I think it would give something away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give this film a 9.8.
I love how much he loves this
movie. I know, it's so nice. Sam doesn't get excited about things. It's amazing to see him get this excited. This movie was incredible. I don't want to say anything about it.
Jeez, you guys.
I'm podcast. Sorry.
It's where we literally are.
I know, but
we don't talk
our voices
on this podcast.
This is like
Byron. This isn't a talkie cast.
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to Kaiser Soze this for anyone. It was too good to do that.
Is that where you kind of like wrestle a drunk serving boy like into bed and then grope him?
I think he's making a Kevin Spacey joke.
Oh, he was. Yeah. I didn't even get it. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
that makes me sad too. God, now I'm really sad.
My work is done.
This movie is incredible. And I was actually telling my father on the way home, because he's like, well, is this one I can take your mother to? I'm like, absolutely not. Do not try to convince her to see this movie. She will hate it. But I'll go see it with you again. I would totally go see this one again, like tomorrow. I give this movie 9.7 pairs of Chacos. That doesn't spoil anything. That's not spoilery, is it?
No. So when I was formulating my final thoughts on my way up here, I was going to say it has three things that I love in a film. And now I'm realizing that I can't say those things out loud.
You can't. You're right.
Those things for you and Sam are
Are those your things?
Yeah.
It's Byron.
Yeah. And I think if you know me well enough after 200 episodes of listening, you might be able to decipher some of those things, especially after watching the movie, which I recommend you do, because this is an incredible film. I loved Get Out. I love this more.
Yeah.
Like Sam said, this is just a horror film.
Yeah.
Performances that I am never going to forget, and an original story that makes me 100% confident in everything that Jordan Peele does, especially that Twilight Zone series. He is the producer and narrator, and it is coming out April 1st.
Yes.
That's the Fool's Day.
I love it. But it's on like CBS streaming, right?
It sure is. I can't wait to watch it. Maybe we'll talk about it for the show, but I'm not going to talk about us anymore. I'm just going to give it 9.5 wolf masks. I don't see how that...
I think that's okay.
I don't see how that does anything.
I think you're all right.
And those are us thoughts on us. You know, us guys.
Mm-hmm. No, they're we thoughts on us, Byron.
Mm-hmm. Which is available now in theaters. I think three recommendations. Go see this movie if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have, let's have a full conversation about this in the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/FrightDay. I like having conversations there, but it's also a great place to talk with like-minded creeps. You could share your opinions on things, talk new trailers, all kinds of fun there.
We actually had our first marriage of people who have met on the FrightDay.
What?
Group. Yeah, wait, what?
No, we didn't.
Oh, God.
I was going to say, how the hell did I miss that?
I didn't
Not
get
a thing.
Informed because I'm still working on the dating app Fright Date, so they can't be doing that without me.
That's the one where you just have questions like, what are you wearing? And what's your favorite scary movie?
It's basically
that's
that.
Amazing.
Also, tweet us at Fright Day. Instagram's the same thing. We got pics there, and we also have DMs if you want to, if that's the way you communicate.
Enable location, and she knows I'm in the house.
Okay. Texting from the attic. You can send us an email, contact@frightday.com, or leave a comment below this episode in the show notes at frightday.com. If you like this show and want to help us make it even better, you can go to shop.frightday.com. Pick up something spooky, you ghoul.
Put it on you.
It's true. We got cotton products, metal products, glow-in-the-darkables. I also have Byron's Cereal Corner Store. It's a good time to plug this, right? I've been selling a lot of my Zodiac composite drawing shirts lately.
It's future murderabilia.
Right. Yeah. And also, I've got a new pin that is going to be coming out next week. Everyone was going crazy for that Gein drawing. I've got a Ted Bundy.
Hey.
Thank you, guys.
Is it Ted as Ted or is it Ted as Pogo?
No, that's... All right. Listen,
oh, I'm sorry. That's fish.
Patches, all kinds of stuff. Shop.frightday.com. Check it out. And our voices are going to end. We're going to stop talking.
Are we?
Not forever.
For a while, though.
Yeah, unless you go
be
to...
Be good for my voice these days.
Rest up. But oof. People can go to patreon.com/frightday if they want more now. When you support us on Patreon, you get access to a whole bunch of things. Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies bonus episodes, Byron's Serial Corner, The Writer's Room, Cinema Autopsy, Toast to Toast PM with Wine Kelly, Behind the Screams.
Yes.
I feel like I missed one. Doesn't matter. Go check it out and let me know if I did. Patreon.com/frightday. When you do, you also get access to live streams, 15% off promo code, and you're helping us.
Which, honestly, we need all the help that we can muster.
Of course we do. Your support does really mean a lot. So a lot of you are already on Patreon. And most helpful of all, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That's the best way to get us inside ears and up of those side charts. Upside of charts. It's usually what I say. Next week, IFC Midnight's The Wind.
Exciting.
A lot of people are talking about it. I can't wait.
I'm excited about it. I think it looks really cool.
I love frontier horror stories.
This is going to be a tough one to follow, but...
Well,
you know,
someone's got to do it.
Yeah, it's true.
Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Frightday on Twitter, or you can email me, kelly@frightday.com.
I am at Sam Frightday. Email me, sam@frightday.com.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter and Instagram. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And until next Frightday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Kill your doppelganger.
Listening to an Audio Wool original produced by Byron McCoy, theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.